Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Thursday. It's October 10th, 2019. Later today, there is going to be what will surely be a very exciting Giants-Patriots game played in a rainstorm. Before that, though, if you're interested in hearing something about two teams who are not playing tonight, but who are struggling a little bit on offense, and we're going to talk about those offenses today, and joining us to do that is the NFL editor at USA Today Sports Media Group. It is a longtime friend of mine, Football Outsiders, does excellent work covering the NFL. It's Doug Farrar. Doug, how are you?
Good, Bill. I always have to mention Football Outsiders 2006 draft class. Woohoo, go us.
Yes, just, I don't know if there was anyone in the draft class besides us two. So it's good. They traded up. They got one blue chip prospect in you. And then I don't know whatever I am, but, that class seems to have gone okay.
I was the mid school guy who didn't go to college. I was the Eric Swan. I'm not sure. I'm probably ruining this. By the way, are you playing running back for the Giants tonight, Bill?
I'm not playing running back for the Giants. I've seen
good how Lord.
That goes. It usually ends with you getting injured, so I would qualify pretty easily for that. But, that's a bit of a mess, huh? And we're down to Golden Tate and not much else as far as the weapons go.
Evan Ingram's out. All the running backs are out. And, here comes the best defense in DVOA history through 5 weeks. Nice.
I'm fine with that. I'm not stretching those guys. Like, can I read about Saquon Barkley, rushing to come back? I'm just thinking, what are you rushing for? Like the Giants don't need to win this year. Just take it easy. That ankle should be 100%. No need to sprint back onto the field with a gimpy ankle.
We appreciate your competitiveness. Yes. Please take a seat.
Yeah, exactly. Just maybe just play Madden for a while and just be competitive that way. Just chill.
Yes.
We'll be ready for you when you're ready. But yeah.
Just imagine do virtual wheel routes for like a month, and then you can, take your own pace.
Exactly. And the Giants, granted, might be better with Odell Beckham in the lineup as opposed to the players they do have, but Odell Beckham has made his way to Cleveland, and I don't think it is related to Odell Beckham, but the Cleveland Browns are also struggling on offense. They are, if I'm not mistaken, to use the stat from the draft university we both came from, Football Outsiders, the Browns are 29th in offensive DVOA. And as Robert Mays put it in his column today, the three teams below the Browns are Washington, just fired their coach, the Jets, whose quarterback has had mononucleosis, and the Dolphins, who are not trying to win football games, which is bad. You don't want to be ahead of only those three teams, because those three teams are barely NFL teams. It's been a mess in Cleveland. And so, Doug, let's just start with, I guess, the most obvious target, I think, that's come out over the past 3 weeks in Baker Mayfield. How much of what's happened in Cleveland over the past few weeks do you put on his shoulders?
Well, this downturn is particularly, to start with the overview, this downturn is particularly remarkable in that in the second half of the season in 2018, and this is, after they fired Haley, they fired Jackson, they put Freddie Kitchens in charge. The Browns went from, I believe, 29th in passing DVOA to first.
That's good.
They were the best passing team per DVOA in the second half of the 2018 season. And you figure, they're going to figure the Oklahoma, they're going to figure the guy out a little bit.
Sure.
Maybe they'll take away his first streak. The narratives about Mayfield that are true are still true. He's a first read guy. He's a quick processor when he knows what he's seeing. He's very decisive and definitive as a thrower when you give him either a single sort of first read open concept or a crosser or a rub where it's easy. It's one or two. He's what I would call at this point in his career a binary quarterback. He can choose one of two things. And the thing about Baker, and I'll go to Jacksonville for a second, what they're doing with Minshew this year, because I think Minshew is a very similar quarterback to Mayfield. They're doing a dynamite job giving him options that are obvious. I don't mean to say that he's unintelligent, because both Minshew and Mayfield are very, very highly intelligent people and quarterbacks. But they're giving them, I guess, what I would call, for my own shorthand, binary reads. It's a one or a zero. It's this or that. Mm-hmm. And what Freddie Kitchens did when he took over that offense last year, It was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of crossers, a lot of rub concepts. It was, and one thing I do when I watch tape, when I watch the All-22 on Game Pass, is when I'm studying a quarterback in depth, I like to stop, I like to pause the both the overhead and the end zone camera right when the quarterback has taken his plant drop. And he's, you know, he's got a hitch, he's going to throw. Mm-hmm. But I want to pause it right there. I want to see where his receivers are, what his receivers are doing. And if you do that in Game Pass with the 2018 and the 2019 rounds, I think you're going to see something very there's a stark difference in what Mayfield is seeing and what he's allowed to see with the route concepts. For a couple of things. The Browns are, I believe, 23rd in pace this year, offensive pace, seconds per play. They're not doing quick game well. Their formation diversity is shot to heck. They're running, what is it, like 75% 11 personnel?
Yeah, it's really high.
And Mayfield's efficiency in 11 is, yeah, it's 78%, but I'm looking at Sharp Football Analysis for this. 78%, his quarterback rating is 73.3. They run 12 personnel, 18% of the time his quarterback rating in 12 is 143.9. Now, you can attribute some of that to maybe better protection, but a couple of things are happening to Mayfield's perception of the play in the down. When he hits his back foot in 2018, he knows what he's seeing. He's got a confident read. He's making a confident throw. Mm-hmm. When he hits, based on my observation, I'm not in the room with Freddie Kitchens. I don't know what the hell he's doing. But when I see Baker Mayfield drop to throw in 2019, mm-hmm. he's still waiting for the routes to develop. He's not a confident thrower. He's not seeing binary. All of a sudden, there are all these colors that he's not seen before. He's never, you know, it's not that sort of second to third level of the field where when you hit your plant foot, when you hit your back foot and you're going to then, you know, hitch up to make your throw mm-hmm. or roll boot or whatever you're doing, you have a confident read. Multiple times this season, especially if you look at his interceptions and his incompletions, obviously. But, I mean, he's making some plays in that sort of elongated structure. Mm-hmm. But I think what the offensive coaching staff has done to his detriment in 2019 is they've taken away, if we say a play lasts 3 seconds, they've taken away a lot of the first 1.5 seconds, and they're asking him to create structure in the second 1.5 seconds, and he's never done that before. So I think he's playing catch-up in his head. And I know a lot of this is attributed to the offensive line, and yeah, the offensive line has had problems, but if you remember Aaron Rodgers. I sure would like to forget that marriage. If you remember Aaron Rodgers, for God's sake, hey, it's 7 o'clock on the Pacific. You know, Pacific come on, give me a break here. If you remember Aaron Rodgers getting very skittish in the Mike McCarthy era when he wasn't seeing openings over and over and over, mm-hmm. over time, if openings are not created for you, I don't care how great you are. Aaron Rodgers is the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And that's not hyperbole. He is the greatest physically gifted quarterback I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. You beat him over the head with those garbage routes for enough years, he's going to look like David Carr. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. So I think what's on Mayfield is he's being asked to do a graduate degree of quarterback reading when really he's kind of a junior. So I think they're asking him to do too much.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I think to your point, you know, it seems like, and I'm not the only person who's noticed this, the only person who's sort of commented on this, it's pretty obvious when you watch, you know, Baker play for any length of time. When he sort of does get to, you know, the point where he is supposed to be ready to throw and nothing's there, it seems like he has a very, very consistent habit of just either extending his drop and so making it hard for his offensive lineman to protect him, or most frequently drifting to the right to try and sort of create something. And teams, it seems like, on defense are noticing that. Clay Matthews had a sack or had a pressure on the final play of the game against the Rams where he waited for Baker to drift right. Mays in his column today pointed out a play where, you know, coordinators were basically waiting for him to drift to the right and then having their linemen sort of twist over to that side and you know, be there by the time
the Jets, by the way, just to interrupt, the Jets did a really good job of that. They Williams, and of course Williams would know his tendencies. They schemed his rollouts incredibly well.
So, I mean, you know, is that something where you're surprised the Browns haven't put more of an emphasis on trying to fix that, or is it just that's what Baker's going to do?
I don't know, because, again, I mean, and I wrote, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks into the Freddie Kitchens era, I wrote a tape piece about why it was working, and so much of it was, like, I mean, he's, it's interesting because he stole a lot of concepts from McVay. There was a touchdown against the Chiefs in Week 9 where he they ran a double slant in the red zone, which, of course, is a McVay staple. They're running, you know, wheel crossers. They're running, you know, simple crossers to both sides. He was seeing a lot of things that he saw in college, and it was comfortable for him. And these are concepts that can win in the NFL. If I were to boil it down to one thing, you know, and I don't know how much of this is Baker Mayfield's fault per se, but I think what happens when you, and I mean, I live in Seattle. I've watched every snap Russell Wilson's taken. I've seen a lot of snaps in practice. I mean, there were times early in his career where if he didn't see what he wanted, he would roll around and, you know, get sacked or make a stupid throw once in a while. And that happens. That's part of your development as a quarterback. I don't know if the Browns are saying to Baker, okay, we ran this hippie high school stuff last year. Defenses are going to figure us out, so we now have to become more evolved. I think it's a common mistake that coaching staffs make too quickly with young quarterbacks. If that's what they've said, I wouldn't be surprised because that's what I see on the field.
All right, Doug, let's talk more about the Browns' struggles on offense in a moment. But first, guys, they say the best offense is a good defense. And that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. It's time to help keep your engine running like new. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered to defend against four main engine threats: gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction. It's our most advanced fuel ever, protecting your engine like a solid stiff arm, a huge hit, or a last-second block. And like defensive lines, not all premium fuels are the same. Now that's fuel for thought. And if you're a Fuel Rewards member, you save at least 5 cents per gallon on every fill-up with gold status. If you're not a member, you can download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com to join and never pay full price for gas again. We talked about this last year when you were on the show. After the Bucks hot start to the season, that you're someone who really thinks pretty highly of Todd Monken's work. And he, of course, is the OC there in Cleveland now after leaving Tampa Bay. Do you see his fingerprints on this offense at all?
No.
Interesting.
I don't. Well, I'm not sure whose fingerprints are on the offense. What I'm seeing a lot of, I mean, honestly, Bill, I'm seeing is, it looks like if you didn't really watch what our friend Greg Cosell likes to call receiver distribution location, and you just looked at the personnel stuff, and you said, I want to be like Sean McVay. So I'm going to run a lot of tight splits. I'm going to, you know, run nasty splits and a bunch of 11 personnel. I was watching one play. I believe it was one of his interceptions. They had four receivers. It was one of his interceptions this year. It may have been against Baltimore. Okay. They had four receivers to one side. And in the first three steps of Mayfield's drop back, none of his receivers was able to create a definitive opening with the routes, with their routes. So at that point, what are you doing? What are you trying to accomplish here? I mean, if you want to create a more vertical passing game, do it like Bruce Arians, for God's sake, because Bruce, I mean, he'll run levels, he'll run verts, he'll run all that stuff, but 90% of the time, and it's one reason that Jameis is so comfortable in that passing game right now, he will create a backside crosser to make it, okay, if you're flooding the right side with verts, if you're fronting your play side with verts, and everything's covered, if they're going all the way to over there, you are damn well going to have Larry Fitzgerald on the backside.
Right.
And Larry's going to get open. And we just pile on Mike McCarthy as the offensive play designer of this era that creates the fewest easy openings. So I don't want to become sort of cliched here, but I see a lot of that. I see a lot of I'll go back to what I said about the sort of binary thing. And every quarterback needs this. I don't care who you are. You need designed openings, and you need to be able to trust them. You need, and Bill Walsh had always talked about, you know, the timing of the drop and the timing of the route, those two things in concert with each other. Mm-hmm. I don't see that at all. I saw it a ton last year. So honestly, I don't care if it's Kitchens. I don't care if it's Monken. I don't care if it's, you know, Clark Shaughnessy, he'd come back from the dead. It's not working. They got to figure it out. They have to give Mayfield something he can see in his first two or three drops on a five-step drop, or if they're going to run seven-step or whatever, or if they're going to run a quick game, which they should, just to get him back on track, just to get him in a rhythm. I mean, and I know we're going to talk about Goff, too, and I remember reading that when Sean McVay became the Rams head coach after that disastrous first season Goff had, one of the first things McVay told Goff was, you are always going to have an easy first read, or most of the time you will have that. You will learn to trust it. I don't think Baker trusts what he's seeing on the field right now.
That's
why he's quote unquote improvising. That's why he's skittish. That's why he's bulky. I mean, does he have a crap offensive line? I mean, it doesn't help. Mm-hmm. Are his receivers, you know, in tune with him? Well, okay, maybe not. I don't know. I think you can get in tune with Odell Beckham Jr. pretty easily.
Yeah,
but I don't think he's seeing favorable route. And it's kind of the first thing. You know, we all have our own kind of default mechanisms as to what we blame when a quarterback has gone wrong. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I tend to look for is this guy's play designer kind of screwing him? So I get really careful with that, but I've watched this offense a lot. I've watched plays over and over, and that's the main thing I'm seeing is he's just not, for a guy who needs quick game, a guy who needs defined first and second, easy, open, quick reads, he's not getting that. So my hypothesis would be, again, Kitchens and Monken, the whole staff, okay, you know, this college stuff we did last year, they're going to figure that out, so we have to be more advanced. Well, if you take that beyond where your quarterback can process, you're killing your whole offense. That's what I think is going on.
Yeah, and I wonder if, you know, because there's, you know, Monken has that air raid experience, I wonder if he'd be better, but I do think that you know, it's not just as simple as saying, okay, we got it's the wrong play caller. You know, if the plays are going to be the same and it's just, you know, they're called at different rates or called in different ways, I think there are still going to be the same issues. And you mentioned, the offensive line. You mentioned that it's not, you know, I think it's getting maybe a little bit too much of the blame, given that I think Baker's not very, very easy to pass protect, but I think they could certainly play better. I think that's absolutely also fair to say. But I wonder, I mean, given where this roster currently is, given where the offense currently is, would you be comfortable sitting there and saying, hey, let's give up a first-round pick for Trent Williams and try and solve that problem and see if that helps? Or do you think the problems are, it seems like a little deeper than just fixing that one maybe problem spot on the offensive line?
I'm going to answer the overarching question. Let's look at the double slant in the red zone. Mm-hmm. Let's look at that as an idea and what that does. You know, two receivers to one side in a tight formation, twins formation, and they're each running the same slant, maybe, let's say, a yard and a half apart. Now, what does that do? The underneath receiver is the first read. The over-the-top receiver, he's going to lift coverage away from the underneath guy. Now, that gives you, with structure, with, again, receiver distribution and location, thank you, Greg Cosell, that gives you your read. That gives you the structure of the play. That gives you, okay, now I understand the number of steps before he's going to break in his route for both guys. Now I have a plan. Now I'm going to run five-step in the red zone. Whether I've got Trent Williams or Jermaine Ifedi, it doesn't matter. If I'm not seeing that in my head to a greater or lesser degree, the pass pro doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If I'm not seeing it, then I'm going out there and I'm kind of hoping that things work out. And in the NFL, you can't hope that things work out. You have to know.
Right.
I mean, even a Russell Wilson who's, you know, just taking this improvisation to a, like a John Coltrane degree, he still has to know. And those shot plays, you know, that come out of play action, he still has to understand, and his receivers have to understand, whether it's in or out of the structure of the play. But something as simple as a double slant in the red zone. I mean, Baker had those last year. And now I'm seeing these long developing route concepts that don't really cross. They don't test coverage this year. Mm-hmm. In coverage is one way I'd put it. They're not, they are being dictated to by the defense. Whereas last year they were telling the defense what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know to what percentage it's Freddie Kitchens versus Todd Monken. I know they're asking Mayfield to do too much. I know in the structure of this offense with the personnel, it's not working. Were it me, I would get not too rudimentary, but go back to 3- and 5-step drop, RPO, crossers with RPO, time everything up, get the guy in a rhythm for the first 5 or 6 pass attempts, and then maybe if you want to hurl one downfield with your magical Mike McCarthy bullcrap, then sure, go right ahead. But they've got to get him in a rhythm because he's not. And quarterbacks depend on timing and rhythm above all else, and it's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that, you know, I guess they can afford – maybe afford is the wrong word, but they play the Seahawks this week. They play your home team, the Seattle Seahawks, this week at home in Cleveland. They have a bye next week, so you'd figure that might be a chance to kind of take a step back, think about what you're doing on offense before – what will be.
And Seattle's pass defense is pretty vulnerable.
Yeah, it's bad. I think people think it's good because Seattle's playing well and because their pass defense has been good for a long time, but it's not good this year.
And they've got a lot of young guys who could be moved pretty heavily by, especially, you know, late in the down, switch releases and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is unusually for a Pete Carroll team. They're playing a get well defense here.
Yeah. And so, you know, you figure the bye week might be a chance to kind of take a step back, look at your offense, make some changes. They play the Patriots in New England the following week. That's not a great spot. I wouldn't want to play that defense any week, let alone, you know, an offense that's struggling, but maybe that's a chance to kind of, you know, against the second half of that year, the schedule's pretty weak. It's Denver, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Miami, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Arizona, some bad defenses. Steelers are good, but some bad teams on the whole there. You know, a mix of really good defenses and some pretty bad ones. So you would figure they might have a shot to improve on things in the second half, but we're going to talk about another offense that is struggling a little bit.
Well, I just saw a quote on my Twitter feed from Todd Monk, and it's a week-to-week league. It doesn't take long to get some of these things resolved. So there you go.
Phew. Problem solved. I don't know. I even spent 25 minutes talking about it. If it just takes
I know. We just wasted our time.
But let's waste some more of your time after the break talking about the Rams and their offense here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm joined by USA Today's Doug Farr. Just talked about the Browns offense and some of the issues they were having. And I think, to be fair, the Browns would love to have the issues the Rams are having on offense, because the Rams offense is still pretty good. But I think there is maybe, you know, this sense of, how would I put it? The sense of not superiority, but the sense of being ahead of the curve, the sense of sort of being one or two steps ahead, of having this sort of magic where, you know, they're just making great defenses like the Vikings last year look foolish. Rams have not really had the ability to pull that off this year. It's been more of a struggle for that offense. And so I think the sort of natural conversation that's sprouted up around that is the idea that people are copying what the Lions did last year, what the Bears did last year, and what the Patriots did last year to the Rams in the Super Bowl. So, Doug, in terms of that six-man front, has that really been a hindrance to what the Rams want to do on offense?
Well, it's affected the run game to a point. It's throwing coverage, because when you have a 6-1, I mean, in obvious passing downs, Belichick and his staff have also been really good at, okay, it worked. Because if you go back to the 46, mm-hmm. The 85 Bears were actually a 4-3 team. The 46 defense was a sub-package. They didn't run it all the time because they couldn't. And it was Rex Ryan, Ryan's son, who then added zone looks to the 46 when he was, I believe he was the defensive coordinator for the Ravens when he did that. Jeff Fisher with the Titans, who, of course, played for Buddy. You know, the 46 and the they're somewhat similar concepts. And what I'm getting at is, when you run that, the sensible idea is that you're limited with flexibility in coverage. Mm-hmm. And what Belichick has done is what Belichick always does, which is to say, nerds to you, I'm going to do it the Bill Belichick way, and I'm going to kick your ass, and there you go. You know, McVay has adapted with some crack toss ideas and some things that flow away from the play, and with defenses that aren't as disciplined as New England's, that will work. I don't see that as a primary issue. If we go back to, you know, when Goff was killing everybody, I mean, he was killing a Chiefs defense where Bob Sutton couldn't get fired quickly enough. He killed a Vikings defense where they're running Anthony Barr and seam coverage over and over, and goodness knows why the hell they were doing that. I think a few things happened. I think the Lions, they did a couple things that threw Goff off. And we should go back to, and this was in the Football Outsiders Almanac, of course, which everyone should own.
Yes.
I want to find the drop. Well, I can't find it right now, but the drop in DVOA when Cooper Kupp was hurt, the drop in Goff's DVOA was epic. It was like the drop between Russell Wilson and Ryan Tannehill. It was bad. If we go back to what we said about Mayfield, the easy, presentable first read. Well, a lot of times, and for Wilson, that was always Doug Baldwin. Now it's kind of Tyler Lockett. It's Will Disley to a point. But that first easy open read or the second defined read will often be one guy over and over and over. And you develop that special trust with a receiver. Well, Goff had developed that with Kupp, and Kupp understands how to get open quickly in short areas, which is extremely helpful for Goff.
Yes.
What the Lions did and what other teams did is they said, okay, first of all, we're not biting on the backfield motion anymore. You know, the jet sweeps and the orbit motions, and okay, we're not committing a defender to that crap, because I believe it was less than 10% of the time the pass play was the guy running motion. It was just a bunch of flash. It was, you know, it was the flare in Office Space. It was nothing. Mm-hmm. So they took that out. The Lions also, I mean, they used their man coverage, but they also backed into coverage, and they forced Goff to go to process more quickly because things were happening that he didn't expect. And one thing I would say about Jared Goff, based on my observations, that I would not say about Baker Mayfield, is that Goff is a late processor. Mm-hmm. And this can be fatal. And I haven't seen a lot of improvement, and it's bothersome. It's disconcerting. I'll point to the second of three interceptions, I believe he threw. Yeah, second of three interceptions he threw against the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. This is one he intended for Gerald Everett. Levante David picked it off. And this is a fascinating play because, by the way, Todd Bowles has been not against the Saints last week, but he's been drawing up some evil stuff. And on this play, you've got Vernon Hargraves giving a mantel pre-snap. And then right at the snap, the safety Whitehead he just crashes with a blitz. Mm-hmm. And David drops into coverage. So a couple things happen here. Goff is expecting his guy on the backside with a simple in cut to be open. Mm-hmm. And that switch in coverage, to see the first, if I'm going through this in my head, if he's got Hargreaves running across man, well, you don't expect a zone blitz. Maybe you expect a switch drop, but you're not thinking that's what's going to happen. So you're thinking this is man across the board. Mm-hmm. And I often wonder, okay, if you're showing man pre-snap by following the receiver, why are you not still installing zone concepts? And a lot of guys get tricked by that. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Bowles does a great job here of showing Goff one thing and then asking him to react to something else, because you would not expect that kind of drop in straight up the board man. So Goff has to process, and he processes late. The story in the Super Bowl of, you know, once the headset comes off, the Patriots then go to different defensive looks over and over and over. Are other teams doing this? Well, I would say other teams are doing this more and more in a general sense. And I think it's more of a universal reaction to first and second read quarterbacks coming out of college and having instant success with the more static cover one and cover three defenses. Mm-hmm. I think a few things are happening. Teams are playing more man, which just forces you most of the time, if your coverage is good, it forces your quarterback to elongate his decision-making process. Mm-hmm. They're playing more match. They're playing more quarters. But they're definitely giving quarterbacks things to think about in the second half of the post-snap phase, the post-snap process. So Goff is getting more of that, as I think Mayfield is getting more of that. I mean, I go back to the way the Jets gave him things he didn't expect. The Ravens gave him things he didn't expect. The Ravens do that to everybody.
Right.
Hasn't helped the run defense at all, but you know what I mean. So Goff is a late processor. I don't know how you fix that, but it's something that I've noticed. I noticed it on his Cal tape. I noticed it in the first year. I'm like, well, it's Rob Boris. I figure Sean McVay is, you know, he's going to give him defined reads. He's going to help him a lot. But there are plays where, you know, and with Mayfield, we're wondering, is it Kitchens? Is it Monken? Should it be this guy? Should it be that guy? I don't really put this on Sean McVay. I think he has a quarterback with a reasonably low ceiling, and Goff is butting up against it. He's got a downturn in his offensive line.
Yes.
His running game isn't necessarily working, you know, but I think when we always look to assign responsibility or blame in this, I think in the Rams case and in Goff's case, most of it's on Goff. I think he's just, I don't know what Mayfield's ceiling is. I think we've kind of seen what Goff's ceiling is, and I don't know how he's going to go above it. It's like he's physically limited, and I'm not saying he's unintelligent. I just think he takes that tick longer to process what he's seeing defensively that separates the great quarterbacks from the good ones. And some quarterbacks are only ever going to be good because they can't accelerate that processing speed.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, I think the thing that comes to mind for me with this offense is that so much of it is built on play action, and so much of it is built off of, you know, we're going to run outside zone. We're going to run play action off outside zone. And then that's going to give our quarterback natural reads and, you know, opportunities to exploit linebackers who, you know, over pursue or flow to the play fake. And, you know, when you're not running as much outside zone, and I think that's what at least the idea behind this 6-man front is, to take that away or limit its effectiveness. And you do run, you know, more crack toss, for example. It's harder to run play action off of that because it's not, the play fakes aren't going to be as natural. And then you look at Jared Goff's numbers on play action this year, which were great in years past. They've collapsed. He's been a mess on play action. And that could be a
16 touchdowns and 2 interceptions on play action in 2018. Mm-hmm. He's got 0 touchdowns and 3 picks.
Yeah, that's bad.
And he's, yeah. Well, there's another thing. When you have teams saying, we're not going to respect your offensive line and we're not going to respect your quarterback, we don't think we need to pressure Jared Goff to upset his ability to make a play. Mm-hmm. We think that if we go into coverage and we don't have to overcommit to either creating pressure or assigning a single defender to your backfield motion concepts or whatever, we think we can just, you know, push him over with using coverage. Then, you know, obviously one of the things that people want out of play action is to have your linebackers overcommit, and then you've got something easy. It's one more way to create easy reads. That's not really happening. So now play action is another processing problem for Goff, where it was obviously an enormous advantage last year. So now he's got to figure out, you know, we've gone from simple math to we go like fractions to calculus here on defense. And certainly in the case of, you know, like Todd Bowles, he's facing, and we always say this about quarterbacks, you know, that everyone has a plan until they get hit, and every quarterback gets figured out, and how do you transcend that? You know, with Goff, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I wrote a long, 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 long tape piece when they gave him that contract. And I thought to myself, if there was one team in the current NFL who was best set up to do the big thing, the money ball thing,
Doug,
if there was one team that was set up to do it,
this is dangerous. This has gotten me in trouble. Every time I see Adam Schefter, he reminds me that the Rams organization is not pleased that I suggested this publicly. I don't want you to have to suffer the same fate. Please be careful with what you're about to say.
Oh, Bill, I still think running backs matter. I'm immune. I get on my suit armor and I go. Do you agree? I didn't see that. So do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I think I don't know that I would be brave enough to do it. I think we are really, really it's so hard to scout quarterbacks. And, I would be worried that if I make a mistake, not only am I going to get fired, but everyone who works for me is going to get fired. That's a lot of pressure when you have a guy who, you know, when the rabbit you have in your hand is pretty good. That's not really something I think anyone's actually going to do. But like you were about to say, I think I didn't mean to cut you off, but like you were about to say, if any team in the league makes sense to do this, it would be the Los Angeles Rams.
Because basically, I mean, in my opinion, what the Rams did is they kind of did what the Vikings did with Kirk Cousins, mm-hmm. except this was less forgivable because they knew what Jared Goff was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with, I'm not saying that I think Cousins is slightly more fundamentally limited physically. Mm-hmm. But as far as what I've seen regarding processing, regarding stat collection without meaningful plays in those stats, are they entirely dissimilar? I would say not. So when you have a guy that you know what he is and you know what he isn't, and then you make that decision, and you have committed an enormous, and you know, with the CBA and new TV money, cap goes over $200 million. Maybe it doesn't matter, but in the current structure, as it sits now, you have now committed, you know, Steve Jobs money to a guy who is fungible, mm-hmm. and that's a problem. Yeah. Because I think Jared Goff is fungible. Russell Wilson is not fungible. Aaron Rodgers is not fungible. Tom Brady is not fungible. Drew Brees is not fungible. You can bring a Teddy Bridgewater in against a vulnerable defense who doesn't know how to defend that specific vertical passing game, as mm-hmm. is the case with the Buccaneers. By the way, I'd love to sit down with Todd Bowles and like, okay, you were like a wizard these first, what happened?
Yeah.
But when you're committing that kind of resource to that position, I think the Rams and the Vikings made the same mistake. It is the most important position in football. It is the one we can't screw up. So let's be safe. And if we have to overpay to be safe, at least we know what we have. Mm-hmm. That doesn't get you transcendence at the position where it is most important to be transcendent.
Yeah.
We talked about the Seahawks. They're 4-1. Russell Wilson is dragging that whole team into the end zone every week. That's a guy who's worth Jared Goff's contract plus. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff is never going to do that. I mean, based on what I've seen, and he's been in that offense long enough, and again, I don't think this is on McVay. I think, you know, in every situation is different. With the Browns, you can kind of go, well, I don't know what Baker's feeling is. I don't know how far he can go. I've seen him do more with more limited concepts and less talented players in the NFL than I've seen Jared Goff do. I've already seen that from Baker Mayfield. So, you know, I'll go back to they could have done this and they did that. Does that put them in a disadvantageous position for X number of years? Well, yeah. And if Sean McVay believes he can take Jared Goff above and beyond, then good for him. Maybe he can. Based on what I've seen, I don't think so. And it goes back to the two words, the words of death for any NFL quarterback, late processor. Mm-hmm. I am far from a quarterback guru, but I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it certainly seems like Jared Goff has taken a step backwards this year as opposed to a step forward at the very least. Even if you're not saying this is what his long-term future is, even if it's not, you know, this is what his ceiling is and he can never possibly get higher, it does seem like he's not whether it's confidence, whether it's just teams adjusting on defense, whether it's the running game not being quite as effective, whether it could be one of many different things. But it certainly seems like he's...
Well, I think he's become more refined within his limitations. Mm-hmm. If we go back to Kirk Cousins, I mean, I'll say this about Kirk Cousins. I think that guy has absolutely maxed out every attribute he has. When people talk about how hard he works, I have no question. Because I remember watching his college tape, but I don't even know if I draft this guy. So you can become more refined in what your limitations are. One guy, I obviously watched season through season. Matt Hasselbeck was a really good example of this. He really, with Mike Holmgren's help, he shaved off the raw edges, and he became, I think, the best possible distillation of what he could be given his skill set. So maybe Goff can become, he's not going to be Andy Dalton his whole life. He's going to become Jared Goff 2.0 and 3.0, and maybe that's, maybe that takes him from good to really good. As far as great, boy, that's a tough one.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly it seems like, when you pay Jared Goff, which, again, it's not... We still have to see the impact of it. His cap hit rises to $36 million next year. And they'll probably adjust it. They'll probably restructure the deal because they're going to keep him around for a while. But, certainly his money is going to rise over the next few years as opposed to the previous few years when he's on a rookie deal. In years past, you had an offense around him that was supposed to cover for Jared Goff's weaknesses, where you had, three really talented weapons, two of whom were getting paid big money. You had, inexpensive left tackle. You had an expensive right tackle. You had an expensive center who's now no longer on the roster. You've already paid one of your tight ends. You paid Todd Gurley. The pieces around him were making a lot of money. And now, in the years to come, they're going to have to make some cutbacks to account for Jared Goff's contract, even given that the cap is rising, even given that you can, structure deals in a way to sort of, make it make sense. It's still going to be difficult. Just the reality is you can't pay everybody. And so,
Well, there's another problem here that we haven't talked about, which is the defense. I mean, that Wakefield defense, it's a lot of coverage busts. A lot of coverage busts that lead to big plays, that lead to scores, and all of a sudden that's more pressure on Goff to, oh, gosh, I have to make this a game. That's an underrated part of his success in 2018 is that defense was really, really good,
yeah.
Took the pressure off him. Now, that pressure is distinctly on him now, so that's one more thing he has to walk around with.
Yeah, I mean, that defense is last in QBR allowed the past 2 weeks. I think last in passer rating as well. By any metric, I was able to find they've been bad. I mean, you see Marcus Peters, in cover zero, and he's letting Mike Evans run 3 yards by him. I don't know why. I can't explain why that was the case. What I find
interesting... Well, that's the Marcus Peters experience. I mean, yes. I don't know what to tell you. Yes, that's
right. What I found interesting and I wanted to ask you about is in the Seahawks game last Thursday, the Rams went with a lot more of 12 personnel, a lot more Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley played, I think, 95% of the snaps as opposed to being right around 71 or 72 in weeks past, but a lot more 12 personnel even early in the game, even before Cooks got hurt, with Cooper Kupp coming off of the field. Does that make sense to you?
Unless Cooper Kupp is hurt, no. You can run Kupp in 12 personnel, but... Obviously, I mean, every quarterback has a binky. Good Lord.
Yeah.
He's Goff's binky, and deservedly so. I remember talking to Vernon Adams, who was, one of the guys I thought was going to be special and wasn't in the NFL. Sorry, Vernon. And he said, and McVay has said, and Goff, everyone who plays with this guy has said, look, he's special. He just understands how to get open, how to help his quarterback. Taking Cooper Kupp off the field unless he's hurt makes no sense at all.
It seems so interesting.
Is he trying to get more fancy with 12 because he thinks in the back of his head, oh, teams have figured out my 11? I think Sean McVay's smarter than that, but that decision is confusing.
That seems too simplistic to me, right?
It really does.
He would have more solutions out of 11 personnel. Maybe try and put some, try and mix up some of the things he does in terms of using Kupp as a blocker.
Well, to be very specific, I don't see the same regression in what I would call route favorability with the Rams that I see with the Browns.
Right.
With the Browns, I think a lot of this is an offense that is kind of circling the drain conceptually. I don't see it with the Rams. So that's a difference.
Yeah, if you look at Goff's numbers, by the NFL's Next Chance Stats, he still has one of the highest expected completion percentages in the league. So, I mean, the receivers he's throwing to are open. He just either is missing some of those throws or...
I mean, he's thrown for over, what, 900 yards in the last two games?
Yeah.
The problem is it's carbs. It's carb yards. That's my new phrase, carb yards. I'm going to start using it. But that's what it is. And, you know, we talk about stat collectors and all that, and that's kind of where we are. You know, is McVay trying to make things more favorable to Goff? Well, I mean, I don't know how much more favorable it can be. The mind reels when the mind thinks of one of the top quarterbacks, Drew Brees and Sean McVay's offense. I mean, well, he's got Sean Payton's offense, but, you know, the obvious one is Russell Wilson, and then the world explodes. So I don't know. And it's an interesting construct to take two young quarterbacks who are experiencing growing pains and saying how much of it is on them. And I, you know, to bring it sort of back to the top, I would say it's a lot less on Mayfield than it is on Goff.
You talked about the Mayfield sort of solutions, and it was, you know, one more quick game, get the ball out quickly, you know, make more of an emphasis on sort of getting back to some of the stuff he was running last year. Are the solutions harder to find with Goff?
I think you have to understand what he is and what he isn't. And I think with that contract, whether they know it or not, and they were just overpaying a safe quarterback, but if they truly believe that Jared Goff is in that realm, it's the worst mistake a team has made with a quarterback since Joe Flacco. Because I'm sorry, Bill, Goff is he's not that guy. When has he ever shown in, you know, we've talked about the Chiefs game and the Vikings game, but in those situations where, I don't want to get talk radio-ish here, but, you know, I don't want to talk about the clutch gene. How can I put this? How many times in unfavorable situations has Goff transcended? Has he gone sort of beyond base zero and shown the ability to, is he a team carrier? Does he lift things? Does he, as John Schneider likes to say, does he tilt the field? Mm-hmm. I don't think he does. And I think his problems are more inherent than Mayfield's.
Let me ask you this, Doug. I mean, is there, if I asked you, what is Jared Goff's signature drive? And again, this is veering heavily towards the talk radio idea, but just in terms of, you know, what is driver you would say, hey, you know, this is the drive Jared Goff would want, you know, as his Hall of Fame tape. This is the, you know, the signature drive for Jared Goff. Is there one that comes to mind for you?
The first drive that comes to mind, I think it was the Eagles game where he was in the red zone and he threw four balls out of bounds.
Oh, that's not nice.
First, second, and third, fourth down.
The drive against the Chiefs, where they got the Gerald Everett touchdown, but that wasn't even that long of a time.
Yeah, I mean, to be serious about it, the Chiefs game, because the Vikings gave Goff a serious advantage with the Anthony Barr thing, which, you know, I still don't know what Mike Zimmer, of all people, was thinking. Yeah, that Chiefs game, I mean, that was really the apex of what Jared Goff could be before the NFL said, oh, if we do these three things, it's different.
Right. And I mean,
see, that's the thing. Goff's signature moves are all done before these three things happened. And then all of a sudden, oh, what do you do now? And the quarterbacks that get to the Hall of Fame that become those major guys, they're not the ones who are puffing and wheezing and, you know, limping to try and figure out what to do next. They had a plan, or they developed one, you know, out of desperation, something new happened. Patrick Mahomes is kind of in that position now because, you know, Denver played man and match against him last year. They played him cover zero. They didn't care and it worked. And now every other team has figured it out. Mm-hmm. So what does he do? You know, if having Watkins and Hill certainly helps, but these quarterbacks, they all have those, you know, near the top of the mountain moments. And do you fall down or you somehow get up there? And that, you know, that's kind of where we are.
Awesome. Well, we are going to keep monitoring Baker Mayfield and Jared Goff. We'll certainly have you back on later on in the year, Doug, but until then, where can people check out more of the work you do?
The Touchdown Wire site at usatoday.com.
Awesome. Well, Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, guys. Thanks so much to Doug Farrar of USA Today. I apologize for the quick absence, I suppose, I had on the show over the past week. I think for a couple of reasons, we are probably going to be moving to a once-a-week schedule during the football season. I am just a little swamped with work, and I think we have the Mina Kim show holding stuff down later in the week. We'll have another show coming for you on Monday, and then I think it's going to be week-to-week depending upon what else is happening, where we have one show or two shows. But thanks so much for your patience. Thanks so much for listening. And be sure to check out the Adam Schefter podcast this week. He talks with ESPN analyst Rex Ryan about what it's like to be fired in the NFL. Remember to subscribe to the Adam Schefter podcast and, of course, the Bill Barnwell show as well, wherever you get your podcasts, and more audio coming.